This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. The Tony Awards are this Sunday. They recognize excellence in American theater. And you might be interested to know that a number of African-American performers and plays that deal with race are nominated for honors. Plays such as Clybourne Park, an edgy take on integration and gentrification in a fictional Chicago neighborhood, and a new interpretation of a classic, the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. And even those not on the award shortlist are making waves on Broadway, including a majority black production of Tennessee Williams's A Streetcar Named Desire. And there's also The Mountaintop, a fictional take on Martin Luther King Jr.'s Last Day. We wanted to speak with two people who are inside the world of American theater to find out how the African-American experience is being envisioned on stage now. Joining me is Kyle Bass. He is the dramaturg for Syracuse Stage, that's in central New York. Also joining us, Chris Jones. He's the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Kyle, I'll start with you. We've spoken with a lot of African-American playwrights and performers over the years on this program, and a lot of them have talked to us about the difficulty of finding meaty roles that interest or challenge them. And I just wanted to ask if you think this is in some ways a high watermark of opportunity for performers.
Well, you know, I think when August Wilson was writing plays, one of the things that was talked about a lot was that his work created opportunities for African-American actors to inhabit realistic, meaningful, meaty, non-stereotypical roles. I think what we're seeing now is writing that does allow that. Whether or not we have writers who are writing from African-American perspective or if we have European-American writers who are writing African-American characters, that discussion and what that allows the actors to do, the opportunities it creates, well, that's, I think that's a question.
So is this a glass half full, glass half empty evaluation for you? How do you think about the theater scene right now?
You know, I think it's evolving. It's evolving like American culture, American society is evolving. We all thought, oh, you know, we have our black president, our first black president, and so we are post-racial. It's not the case, actually. In some ways, I've never felt that I've lived in a country that was more racialized, at least in my lifetime, my adult lifetime. So,
and you feel that way about theater as well, or just about the society, not just, but about the country in general? Or are you speaking specifically about theater when you say that?
Well, you know, if we're talking about theater, hopefully we are talking about society as well in America. So I think in both cases, that is true. Like with Clybourne Park, we have a white American writing a play about race in America, and that has to come from a white point of view. And to some degree, to my thinking, even the black characters are perhaps speaking from or acting within a white way of thinking about race.
Interesting. Oh, well, let's talk a little bit about Clybourne Park, which has been much discussed, even for people who haven't had a chance to see it. Chris, do you want to set it up for us?
Sure. Well, Clybourne Park is basically a riff on Lorraine Hansberry's great play, A Raisin in the Sun. It has two very distinct acts. In the first act of Bruce Norris's play, it's set simultaneous with Hansberry's play. And a lot of people who'll be listening to this will know the basic plot of Hansberry's play, which is an African-American family on the south side of Chicago wants to move to an all-white neighborhood that Hansberry called Clybourne Park, but for those of us who live in Chicago, is pretty clearly a stand-in for Lincoln Park, which is one of the most affluent neighborhoods in the city. And in the play, one of the most famous scenes, a resident of the White Residents Association, a representative of that association, comes to the youngest house and basically says, you know, what will it take for you not to move? In Norris's play, you sort of see the family that is selling the house to the youngest, which Hansberry never really dealt with.
Interesting.
So
it's like a prequel.
First act.
So it's like a
prequel. You might call it a simulquil.
Simulquil.
You know?
And then there's a sequel. And then there's a sequel where you fast forward. And
exactly.
A white family, a young white family, is drastically renovating a house in a neighborhood that has now become predominantly African American.
Correct.
And let me just play a short clip, in fact. It's up for a Tony Award on Sunday. And Chris, you were actually on the committee that awarded that script with a Pulitzer Prize for Best Drama last year. Let me just play a short clip. The clip that I'm going to play is one of the very few that I can play because it's a very, how can I put it? There are a lot
raw.
Of, there's raw. So let me just play that. And then Chris, I'll get your take on it here.
Look, humans
are territorial, okay?
Who are you?
This is why we have wars. One group, one tribe, tries to usurp some territory, and now you guys have this territory, right? And you don't like having it stolen away from you the way white people stole everything else from Black America. We get it, okay? We apologize. But what good does that do if we perpetually fall into the same predictable little euphemistic tap dance around the topic?
You know how to tap dance?
You see? You see?
So each of you has a very different perspective on this. So, Chris, I'll start with you. As we said, you were on the committee that awarded the script with a Pulitzer Prize. So tell me why you felt it deserved it.
Well, I thought this was by far Bruce Norris's best play, for starters. He's always been known in Chicago, where a lot of his plays premiered, as a sort of a satirist, you know, a kind of a guy who was very good at lampooning urban liberals with, you know, kids and SUVs and trips to Whole Foods and that kind of thing. But this play sort of, for me, went further than that, in that it sort of understands, I think, implicitly that a lot of the roots of racial discord are rooted in fear, you might say. And he also links the way that race in America has long been linked with real estate, that the idea of neighborhoods in a city like Chicago, where I've lived for 20 years, those two things are inextricably linked. You know, you'll sometimes walk through the streets of Chicago and you'll come to a dead end in the street and you'll think to yourself, why does that street not go through? You know, why can't I cross that? Why is there a barrier there? And, you come to realize that racial divide was behind a lot of those barriers. So I felt that this here was a piece that really sort of articulated the way in which, you know, for all this, you know, what Kyle was getting at early on, the smug assumption that we're in a post-racial moment is sort of nonsense, because we still live in largely, at least in my city, in largely segregated neighborhoods.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. The Tony Awards are coming up this Sunday. We wanted to take a look at the role of African Americans in theater right now, the roles that they're getting on stage, the plays that are being written and produced about race, or where race is a theme. I'm joined by Chris Jones. He's the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. That's who was speaking just now. Also with us, Kyle Bass, a dramaturg at Syracuse Stage. That's in central New York. Kyle, I understand that you have very different feelings about Clyburn Park.
I do. I read the play maybe a year ago or so. It came into my office, and my original thought was, you know, this doesn't feel like it goes actually far enough, and it feels like the tap dance. It's still on the surface, that the situation that it sets up in and of itself has potential to begin to really delve the issue of race. But I felt in reading it that it didn't go there. On the Tuesday before the play opened in a preview performance, I went to see the play, and partly because I wanted, in some ways, optimistically, to be proven wrong, that it plays, you know, much better than it reads. And I came away actually more disappointed, because now vivified on the stage, I felt that it just didn't go deep enough. It seems to me a play that's for jokes. And if the question seems to be, we'd all be all right if we could just tell racial jokes in front of each other.
Hmm. You feel it's still African Americans or Black people viewed through a white lens that just kind of gives people, let's just say it, white people permission to say racist, raw things because the Black people on stage are saying it back, and that makes it okay.
That seems to me to be, that's the device being used, and that's fine, but it doesn't go further than that. It doesn't go far enough. It doesn't, and maybe I went looking for or hoping for some sort of opinion coming from the playwright about this, and I don't think that it's there. I think the jokes don't begin to delve deeply this vast morass, this issue of race, and, you know, in the country. And no one play can do it all, but I think the fact that it's, you know, that it's popular, that it's receiving, for the most part, you know, glowing reviews, I think that's interesting. That, I think, perhaps says something about its approachability, and that there's something rather kind of comfortable in this. But at the same time, I think it keeps it from going as deep as it might go.
You know, it's
so
interesting.
That's where I was disappointed.
You know, it's interesting because that kind of leads to the other play I wanted to talk about, which was the, I don't know if reinterpretation is quite right, of Porgy and Bess, which is also up for a Tony. You know, since its inception, that play, opera, if you prefer, has had an ick factor, particularly for African Americans, but not exclusively. In fact, we actually spoke with one of the stars, Audra McDonald, back in September, and this is what she told us.
I know these are beautiful songs and there's a beautiful love story here, but I'm being told by seeing these stereotypes up here that I'm not being given the full picture. It's just, it's very difficult as an African-American to be able to come to it.
And this goes back, you know, decades. I mean, decades there were performers who would not, even when roles were very scarce, participate in this. And I just wanted to ask, though, each of you, maybe Chris, I'll start with you on this.
Sure.
If you do deal with race in a serious way, there's going to be an ick factor on one side or the other. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, it's indisputable that this show contains, you know, one of the most gorgeous scores ever written for the theater. I think everybody can agree on that. And I think we could also agree that, you know, when it was first seen in 1935, to a large extent, it really did rely on racial stereotypes. There's no question about that. It's suffused with them, you know. And I think that's why it's always been very, very difficult in so many ways. And it's sort of historically been performed in a very non-naturalistic way, often by opera houses and so on, where perhaps by stylizing what went on, that lack of comfort was ameliorated in some way. But in this production, I think, you know, what they tried to do was offer a more naturalistic milieu and also to deepen these characters. I think what, you know, Ms. McDonald was talking about a little bit there was that you don't have a full enough picture of these characters. They sort of sit there like stereotypes in some way. And I think they achieved that to some degree with this production, but not entirely. It was interesting. I've been influenced by other productions of Porgy I've seen where the characters have felt more in control of their own story. I think the way to make this show work and to, you know, make it less of an ick factor, to use your phrase a little bit, is to really make these characters, empower these characters in the actual telling of their story, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that the ick factor was completely ameliorated in this production.
Kyle, what do you think? I mean, are punches being pulled all over the place even now, even when they seem not to be?
I think in theater that's meant for deep kind of commercial thirst and diet, I think theater makers feel like they can really only go so far with marketability of topic and intent of a piece. So yes, I do think that some punches are being pulled, and it's difficult because when you come to the theater and you hope to have an experience that is artistic and meaningful and entertaining. Well, you know, those three things, to do those things well all in one play is a high bar.
Well, before we let each of you go, I still want to push on the glass half full, glass half empty question, and I hope that's not too reductionist, but I'll embrace it. There's A Streetcar Named Desire, which is a majority black production. I mean, that's something, you know, we've seen theater companies flip the switch on Othello, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Flip the script on that and make Othello white and the rest of the cast black to kind of highlight interesting things. So we've seen different casting or what we call colorblind casting in a lot of Shakespearean productions. That's something that we've seen in recent years. Kyle, I'll give you the first word. So I'm going to ask you first on this, and I'll give Chris the last word. When you look at the totality of experiences that are available now, you feel encouraged, discouraged?
I'm encouraged. Of course I'm encouraged. There's some really exciting work being written. Particularly there seems to be an emergence of young African-American playwrights coming up, more men coming up as well, African-American men bringing their voices into the theater. And so I'm deeply encouraged. And one of the things that I hope will happen is that the theaters find a way to be able to bring people to the theater who want to experience otherness on stage openly, to less coming to look for value. This better be good. I better like this. This cost me $40. But to come and take it in and experience it and be with it.
Chris Jones, I'm going to give you the final word.
Well, in the case of A Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway, which, you know, set Tennessee Williams's play in New Orleans with a cast entirely of color, you can have a variety of views about that show, and I liked it a little more, I think, than most. But I do think this, it completely set to rest the notion that Tennessee Williams's writing belongs to, you know, white folks. I mean, it absolutely worked perfectly, I thought, to have a cast of color doing that play. Williams is really, you know, kind of like Shakespeare these days. He's a poet who I think, as time has gone on, is more and more transcending race. That it seemed the most natural thing in the world to me to have Stella and Stanley and Blanche to be, you know, played by actors of color, and indeed to be characters of color. And the other thing about it was kind of a populist show. The night I was there, the audience kind of cheered when I think it was Blair Underwood took off his shirt at one point. Everybody went crazy around me. It was like that play had been sort of reclaimed by a different audience, a more of a broader audience who wanted to see stars on Broadway and wanted to be entertained. For me, that was a very positive moment, you know, a moment when you said, okay, a play does not belong to any one group on Broadway anymore.
That was Chris Jones. He is the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. He was kind enough to join us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Also with us, Kyle Bass, dramaturg for Syracuse Stage. He was with us from WAER in Syracuse, New York. Thank you both so much for speaking with us. We'll be watching on Sunday.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Bridget Armstrong, Freddie Boswell, Bridget DeShagas, Andrew Limbong, Sanaj Meshkinpour, Emily Oxenschlager, Amitha Parasher, Amy Ta, and Kenya Young. Our intern this semester is Todd Whitney. Welcome, Todd. Our editors are Alicia Montgomery and Ahmad Omar. Our special thanks to NPR's librarians. Our director is Arjun Hutchins. Our senior producer is Devar Ardalan. The technical director is Neil Tevolt. He had a hand this week from Sean Phillips. Our special thanks to engineering supervisor Kevin Langley. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior editor is Portia Robertson-Migas. Our executive producer is Tashima Walker. And remember to tell us more, please go to npr.org and find us under the Programs tab. You can find our podcast there. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Tell Me More NPR. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.